3,000 feet. It will rise to 5,000 feet late tomorrow. Again, the finals in the Pac-8, OSU 61, Washington State University 58, UCLA 82, Cal 74, Stanford by SC 68-64, and Oregon over the Huskies in overtime 72-68. There's a five-way tie for the first round lead in the Joe Garagiola Tucson Open Golf Tournament, and technically that round isn't over yet. 24 golfers were on the course when darkness halted play for the day. CBS News is coming up, followed by the CBS Mystery Theater.
The Medicine Man can fill your prescription for less, and here's proof. 125 milligram tablets of Persantine by Behringer, priced at $11.99 at Pay and Save, but priced at $9.95 at The Medicine Man. You save $2.04 at The Medicine Man. Because The Medicine Man believes the American public has been forced to pay outrageous prices for drugs, he offers everyone discounts. For the drugs you need at consistent savings, see The Medicine Man, 323 North 85th, or call 789-0800 for price quotations and mail-out service. The Medicine Man.
I'm Fred London for Haight Anderson Pontiac Buick and Oldsmobile, where January's red tax specials mean giant savings for you. Forget window sticker prices. They don't mean a thing at Discount Land. Just look for the red tags and make your deal today. Your trade is worth hundreds of dollars more. Here at your total discount dealer, plus all 1976 and 77 demos are extra special discounts. Go to the Muckateel Ferry turnoff on I-5 North, get off at Evergreen, and look for Discount Land.
This is the News Authority, KIRO, Seattle, 10:30.
CBS News. The State Department will neither deny nor confirm a report of an assassination plot against Secretary of State Kissinger. I'm Jerry Landay reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Robert Funseth, the principal spokesman of the State Department, said he would not discuss the report, which appears in Friday editions of the New York Daily News. That report, attributed to high State Department officials, said that a group of Israeli ultra-conservatives put out a contract on Kissinger's life and paid out $150,000 in advance to hire one or more hitmen. Several days ago, the Ford administration asked Congress to continue Kissinger's Secret Service protection beyond the 20th when he is succeeded by Cyrus Vance. The Daily News claims the plotters were angered over the Sinai Accords with Egypt, of which Kissinger was the architect. Kissinger was honored Thursday night by President Gerald Ford. In a White House ceremony, Mr. Ford presenting the secretary with the Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest non-military award.
I believe I speak for all of us when I say that Secretary Kissinger, who we're honoring tonight, we've been impressed by our association with him on a personal basis, impressed by his intellect and his insight, and thankful for his mighty efforts for the cause of peace for mankind on a worldwide basis. He is, so far as this American is concerned, the greatest Secretary of State in the history of our republic.
The award, given at a reception for Kissinger by the diplomatic corps, came as a surprise. More news after this.
There is a country with a contagious disease. That disease is passed from parents to children, and from those children to the children of the next generation. An estimated 1 million of that country's children suffer from that disease, and every year it kills at least 2,000 of them. That disease knows no boundaries of race, religion, income, or social status. Its adult victims are best recognized by their inability to cope with their problems and by their need to take those problems out on the people closest to them. That country is America. That disease is child abuse. For more information on child abuse and what you can do to help, write Prevent Child Abuse, Box 2866, Chicago, Illinois, 60690. That's Box 2866, Chicago, Illinois, 60690. What will you do today that's more important? A public service message of this station, the Advertising Council, and the National Committee for Prevention of Child Abuse.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation in San Francisco has announced the capture of Charles Reese. He's the Brinks guard who disappeared a year ago, allegedly with an estimated $500,000. FBI agents say they found Reese near Santa Fe, New Mexico, with $400 in his possession. Earlier this month, Reese wrote a San Francisco newspaper saying he had spent most of the $500,000 on women, nightclubs, bedding, and gifts. The FBI said the letter appeared authentic. The Senate Finance Committee was taking testimony from Joseph Califano on his nomination as Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. Richard Roth reports.
Califano was questioned closely on his abortion views by Hathaway of Maine and Packwood of Oregon. Califano said he is personally opposed to abortions except to save the lives of pregnant women. He also said he is personally opposed to paying for abortions with federal Medicaid funds, but he said his personal views would not interfere with his official responsibilities.
I would not have even gone to Plains for an interview. Or Atlanta for an interview, had I not thought this problem through and been willing to enforce whatever the law of this land is as vigorously as I will try to enforce every other law.
Califano said he would support a change in the law to cut off federal subsidy of abortions, but he said a constitutional amendment banning abortions would be a bad idea. Richard Roth, CBS News on Capitol Hill.
Now this.
The most important people since people first began.
To UNICEF. The Tucson Boys Choir gave their talents. To learn what you can give, call your local UNICEF committee or write UNICEF, United Nations, New York.
The child is father of the man.
Melvin Dumar, a former Utah gas station operator, admits that he delivered a purported will of Howard Hughes to the Mormon Tabernacle in Salt Lake City. The will names him as a beneficiary, but the document, experts say, could still be the real document. All four handwriting analysts who said Dumar wrote the address on the envelope containing the will also reportedly insist that the will was written by Hughes. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
Hello, say hello on a Craco.
Craco CB.
Say hello on a Craco.
Craco CB.
Craco CB is leading the way, son.
Say hello on a Craco. Say hello on a brand new 40-channel Craco Citizens Band Radio. Your long wait is over. 40-channel CB has arrived, and Craco retailers have them. A big, new, great-looking line of styles and price ranges to fit your needs perfectly. And every 40-channel set has Craco's famous Spaz-O-Matic for locked-in clear reception. Wait no more. Move to 40 now.
Say hello on a Craco.
Craco 40-channel CB is available now at Fred Meyer, Kmart, and Shuck's Auto Supply Stores.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Pause while there is strength and breath to play again with love and death. Love and death, the two supreme games of life itself. Love, which is the only meaning of life, and death, which is the end. But can there be another meaning, or perhaps another ending? Pause. Pause, as the poet says, and listen.
Mrs. Purdy, two people have died in this room. How do you account for it?
I can't.
There is something in this room that kills.
That isn't true.
Some spirit, some force, perhaps something impalpable, intangible.
Well, that's nonsense.
Well, then perhaps it's something tangible and definite.
Like what?
Not like what. Like who? Like you, Mrs. Purdy. Like you.
Our mystery drama, Don't Die Without Me, was especially adapted from the O. Henry classic for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Robert Dryden and Marion Seldes. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The standard engine is a V8. Standard tires, steel-belted radials. There are front and rear stabilizer bars, special springs and shock valving, fast ratio power steering, and a rally steering wheel. What makes all this interesting is that it belongs to a full-size six-passenger Buick, the 1977 LeSabre Sport Coupe. You'll have to drive it to believe it.
You're straining at the oars of a dory in pursuit of a great whale. You get closer, and suddenly a huge form emerges from the ocean, and you're in the middle of adventure. I'm Hyman Brown, inviting you to the special radio excitement coming to this station. Adventure drama for your children, your neighbor's children, and you. We'll be opening up new worlds for the imagination when adventure begins February 5th on this station.
If you know how to sew, you know how to save money. And if you like saving money, you're going to love Frostline. Maybe you want an insulated ski jacket or a toasty warm comforter or even a handy backpack for your youngster. With Frostline kits, it's easy and economical. With savings up to 50% compared to ready-made. Everything's included in the Frostline kit, even the thread. No patterns to buy because all the material's pre-cut to size. And all Frostline kits can be sewn on any simple, ordinary home sewing machine. For example, the Frostline Niagara jacket, insulated with a 1-inch thick layer of Polar Guard that keeps you warm even when it's wet, would cost you $40 ready-made, but with a Frostline kit, it's just $25.95. Or the Weather Watcher vest. Compare at $25 ready-made, Frostline priced at just $14.95. The price is always right at Frostline, a Cairo Price is Right store at Northeast 127th and Lake City Way in Lake City, and at 20th and 148th Northeast across from Sears in Bellevue.
Restless, shifting, as fugacious as time itself, is a certain vast bulk of the population of the red brick district of the Lower West Side of Manhattan. Homeless, they have 100 homes. They flit from furnished room to furnished room, transients forever, transients in abode, and transients in heart and mind. They sing Home Sweet Home in ragtime. Thus begins a tale by O. Henry, the great master of irony, which illuminates two of life's greatest ironies, love and death. Ah, but the tale is begun. Let the storyteller continue.
Hence, the houses of this district, having had 1,000 dwellers, should have 1,000 tales to tell. Yes, there must be a story behind every one of those windows. This open one on the second story, from whence comes music played on Mr. Edison's latest invention. The tune is ragtime, but does the heart beat in ragtime too? Or to the lonely listener, is it a song of love, of hate, of hope, or despair? Wait. What's that down the street? A crowd, an ambulance. And isn't that my good friend, Sergeant O'Donohue?
All right now, move on. Don't you have nothing better to do?
Sergeant O'Donohue.
Oh, it's you, is it?
What happened here this evening?
You spelled my name wrong. It was printed incorrectly in your newspaper last Friday.
The linotype setter is an Englishman.
Well, that explains it.
Well, what explains this? What's taking place here tonight?
Well, now, sir, how would I know that? Just being a police officer.
Oh, come on, Sergeant. Police officers know everything, especially if they're named O'Donohue.
O'Donohue with a G.
I remember.
Now, sir, tell me something. Why do they come to New York town?
Why does who come to New York?
All the sweet and pretty young things.
Oh, it's the bright lights of Broadway, Sergeant. Even a police officer knows that.
Yes, like moths to the flame.
I see where this is leading.
And here this evening we had a little moth. Perhaps she believed she was a butterfly, but what does it matter? The flame consumes them all in the end.
Well, I'm certainly a man who can follow a figure of speech, but what is this flame to which you refer, Sergeant?
The flame of despair and the flame of loneliness. They sit alone in a furnished room, a stranger among strangers, and they look at the flames. The leaping yellow flames.
The leaping yellow flame?
But now it has become the flicker and blue light of the gas range. They look at the light, and it's so cold and distant. A chill flame without light and warmth, like life itself, cold and dark. So they lean forward, and almost without thinking, they blow out the flame. Now, they're alone in the blackness of the night, and all is silent except for the gas. The low, soft hiss of the gas.
What you're saying is that a girl in this building turned on the...
The low, soft hiss. Like the hiss of a snake. But a kindly snake.
She's dead then, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. May the good Lord rest her gentle.
Are they sure?
Oh, yes, the doctor was there. He passed down the word. You'll have to step out of the way, sir. They're taking her down now.
A very young doctor who rode the ambulance for the city hospital and who was still very new on the job tried to hide the horror in his heart with a look of cynical boredom on his face. But wasn't quite experienced enough to carry it off yet. He was followed by two orderlies who carried a stretcher. The face of the poor unfortunate was supposed to be covered, but the blanket had slipped. For a moment, I caught a glimpse of a fair young face with reddish gold hair. A beauty mark on the chin. Just for a moment, and she was gone. Into the ambulance and away, to be lost and gone forever. Yes?
I've come in to take away the breakfast dishes, sir. Well, I see I can't do that, since you've had neither a sip nor a bite.
Mrs. Paulidge, you have excellent powers of observation.
And you seem to be a bit snippy this morning, Mr. Porter.
That's true. You can't expect a man to be in a good temper all the time, especially when he's having trouble writing a story.
You're having trouble writing a story.
Oh, yes.
How is that possible?
Why would a beautiful young lady want to end her life?
There's a man in it somewhere.
Could there be another reason?
Nah, not for a woman.
Now, this young lady ended her life in a... it could be considered a theatrical rooming house. Perhaps she was despondent because her career had failed.
Nah, I wouldn't believe it. You said she was young and beautiful? Well... The world doesn't have to come to an end for that kind. No, no, no. I could only believe she'd end it all for love.
That's the only way you'd have it?
Afraid so. And you'd better stop fighting it.
The reddish gold hair. For a moment, it seemed like a halo around that angelic young face. A face I knew I would never forget. Why? Why did she do it? Who was she? I looked through the papers. Nothing, not a word. So much happens in the city, there isn't room for everything. Especially the passing of an unknown, obscure young girl, even if she is beautiful. So many of them are beautiful. So beautiful, it breaks your heart. Well, I would have to ask questions.
Yes?
Are you the landlady?
Yes, I am. Her name's Mrs. Purdy. You want to rent a room?
About the young lady who died here last night.
What young lady?
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about.
Are you a cop?
No.
Then what are you snooping around for, asking questions?
I'd like to know why
she... You got the wrong address, sir.
Now, wait, before you slam the door in my face, I'm a newspaper man.
What do you want? She was nothing. She was nobody. Who's going to be interested reading about her?
I want to ask you a few questions.
Oh, come on. Give me a break, sir. If it gets known somebody done the Dutch act in that room, nobody's going to want to rent it. Well, would you?
It doesn't have to get into the newspaper.
Oh. Well, now, you're a gentleman. Are you sure you're a reporter?
Can we talk inside? This is the room?
This is the room.
I see.
Well, what's the matter? It ain't nice. Well, I mean, what do you want for $4 a week, the Ritz?
What was her name?
I don't know her name.
Well, how can that be possible?
Well, the name she gave me was Helen Smith. Do I know if that was her real name?
What did she do?
Well, I don't know.
Where did she work?
I don't know.
Didn't you ask?
Why should I ask? If they want to tell me, they tell me. Otherwise, all they got to do is behave themselves and pay the rent.
Where did she come from?
I don't know.
How long had she been here?
How long? Well, 3 weeks. Yes, I remember I was supposed to collect the fourth week's rent from her this morning.
So, you don't know who she was, where she came from, what she did, or why she killed herself?
Who knows?
What happened to her belongings?
Belongings? She didn't have none. Well, what I mean, she had the dress she was wearing and another one. A skirt, two blouses, some under things, and the shoes she was wearing. Oh, just a few stitches of clothing was all she had to show for the world. Poor child.
And among the things she owned, there was nothing to identify her?
No, sir.
No jewelry?
Jewelry? Oh, bless us, no.
A watch, a ring, a bracelet?
Nothing.
Who discovered her?
Oh, that was my misfortune. I was sitting in the kitchen, drinking beer with Mrs. McCool, my next-door neighbor. And I said, "Is there a smell, Mrs. McCool?" And she answers, "There's a smell, Mrs. Purdy." And with that, we put down our glasses and come rushing up here to the third floor back. We opened the door. And there she is, poor child, laying on the bed. And...
Yes?
Well, we opened the window, but it's too late. So we both ran screaming downstairs into the street.
Well, what else can you tell me?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all, sir. We saw the policeman on the beat, and he sent for the ambulance. Oh, not that it done her any good at all.
And there's nothing you can tell me about the girl?
Well, I've already told you everything I know.
No.
Lunchtime.
I don't want any lunch.
You won't write any better if you're hungry.
Confound it, Mrs. Pollidge. I want to be let alone.
I made you Manhattan clam chowder.
All right, set it down. Ah, Mrs. Pollidge, I'm licked. The story won't come out.
Enjoy the chowder.
Why does this story defeat me? It has everything. It has youth, beauty, tragedy, death. And yet I can't put anything together. The room, seedy and sinister. Yes, sinister. I don't know why. A dungeon, a cell of despair. She came there. She chose the place.
Why?
Why is the story? Have I lost it?
Lost what?
It, the divine, it, the gift, the God-given gift to write.
I don't think so.
Who is this girl? Why did she kill herself?
You should be given answers instead of asking questions.
I'm even asking the wrong questions. Does it matter what her real name was or where she comes from? Isn't it up to me to create all that? I've always been able to do it before.
Come in.
Good morning, sir.
Why...
Sergeant O'Donohue.
With a G.
Yes, sir. I come down here because I thought I could bring you something that might be of interest from a literary point of view.
Yes?
You remember, sir, it was just a week ago. this poor girl that done herself in?
I wish I could forget.
Well, it's happened again.
What's happened again, Sergeant?
Another one. Another one of those unfortunate situations in the same house, in the same room.
What are you telling me, Sergeant?
I suppose what I'm saying is that the room stayed vacant 6 days. Then, last night, the landlady rents it out to a young gentleman, and early this morning, he took the same way out.
Well, what are the odds? We're discussing the final desperate actions of two defeated young people. What are the odds that they could have chosen the same room out of so many thousands in the city? Consider the room. Is there something in the room or about the room? We try to answer questions like these in Act Two, which I shall bring you shortly.
Here's one January white sale that offers more than sheets and towels. Now True Value Hardware stores offer their quality True Test white paints at special low prices during their True Test January white paint sale. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you about just two of them. You'll find True Test Easy Care White Latex Flat Enamel, the wash and wear paint, on sale for just $9.97 a gallon. Most stains, grease, and grime can't readily penetrate Easy Care's enamel hard surface, so they simply wash away without leaving a shiny mark. And True Test Easy Care has earned the Good Housekeeping Seal. True Value Hardware stores also offer True Test Satin Hue White Flat Interior Latex on sale. It provides a rich, flat finish you can wash. It usually covers most surfaces in just one coat and dries in just 30 minutes. It's just $8.97 a gallon. Save on these True Test white paints and more during the True Test white paint sale, going on now exclusively at participating True Value hardware stores.
Mallon Ford represents a continuous line Ford dealership in Tacoma since 1916. Their biggest source of business has been satisfied customers going back again and again. If you haven't talked to a Mallon Ford customer recently, Bob Mallon would like to share this letter.
Many times people have asked me about the factors involved in running a dealership. One very important ingredient, I think, is the team concept, all departments working together. And speaking of one department, I'd like to read a letter from Edward E. Brooks, who had this to say about our service department. All service since I've had my vehicle has been very satisfactory. Thank you. Well, we at Mallon Motors certainly want to thank you, Mr. Brooks, for staying in touch.
Mallon Ford has been making customers happy for 60 years. They're Tacoma's pioneer Ford dealer, 62nd and South Tacoma Way, where one friend tells another about Mallon Ford.
The 4 million. The 4 million human souls who filled the New York of O. Henry's day. With 4 million triumphs, 4 million defeats, 4 million comedies, 4 million tragedies. The shifting, seething mass of 4 million lives. Loving, hating, living, dying. And we're concerned with two of them. A golden-haired girl and...
He was a dark-haired young man.
What else can you tell me about him?
Well, he was maybe 27, 28.
Tell me everything.
Oh, please, sir. If this ever gets out, I'll never be able to rent that room. Never.
I want to know everything.
Well, last night, there was a ringing of my doorbell. And, oh, please, sir.
Go on. Last night. What time?
Well, 9 o'clock, I believe.
9 o'clock. Go ahead.
I don't like to think about it.
Your doorbell rang.
Well, yes. Yes, and he asked if...
Do you have a room to let?
Well, I have the third floor back.
May I see it?
It's $5 a week.
Oh, that's all right.
In advance.
I don't object.
All right, well, come along. Now, I keep a very nice, clean house. What business are you in? How long do you plan to stay there? But I must say, you ain't very talkative.
Would she... Oh, Lord, would she have come to this? Fallen to this? No, oh, no, please.
What's that you're saying? Well, just down the hallway.
Well, and this is the room.
Oh, I see.
It's a nice room. It ain't often vacant. I get the most elegant people here. There's lots of closet room. Oh, it's a place everybody likes. It never stays idle long.
Do you have many theatrical people rooming here?
Oh, they come and they go. There's a good proportion of me lodgers are connected with the theater. But actor folk never stay long anywheres. I get my share. Do you want the room?
I suppose so.
Well, like I said, it's five a week in advance.
All right.
The room's been made nice and fresh. Your towels and the water pitcher's full.
Mrs. Purdy.
I didn't get your name.
Jones.
Jones. All right, we'll leave it be Jones.
Mrs. Purdy, a young girl, about 22. Would she have been one of your lodgers? Her name was Miss Fashner. Eloise Fashner.
No, I can't say I remember that name.
A fair complexion girl, medium height, slender with golden hair, and a beauty mark on her chin. Have you seen her?
No. I ain't seen her. Mr. Jones, are you all right?
Huh? Yes. Good night, Mrs. Purdy.
But you had seen her. You had seen her. She was the girl who...
That girl's name was Helen Smith.
The description, the golden hair, the fair complexion, the beauty mark on the chin.
Oh, there could be a thousand girls like that.
It was the same girl, and you know it.
Oh, please, sir, don't say that.
It was the same girl.
All right. And what if it was? Was it my place to tell him? What would you have me say? Oh, yes, sir. A young lady answering that very description turned the gas on in this room 6 nights ago. Is that what I should have said? Is it?
He was looking for...
Please, sir, don't say any more. I'm scared out of me wits as it is.
There are thousands of rooming houses throughout the city. There are tens of thousands of furnished rooms. What made him pick your place? Why did he choose your house? Why did he come to your house?
That's what he asked me.
That's what he asked. What are you saying?
Sir, he hadn't been in the room an hour when he came downstairs and knocked on my door. Who is it?
Open the door.
What is it? What's wrong?
Mrs. Purdy.
Yes?
Miss Fashner.
Miss Fashner?
The young lady I asked you about.
Oh, yes.
She has been in the room.
She what?
She has been in that room.
Oh, well, now, how could she do to whoever she is?
I knew it. Something drew me to this house. I spent days walking the streets of Broadway. I spoke to the managers, theatrical agents, everyone, anyone from the highest to the lowest.
Mr. Jones, it's late.
Have you seen her? And everywhere, from everyone, the answer was no. Something said to me to walk westward toward the river, and I did. And then the same voice said, here, turn in here, stop here, rest here, stay here. Here is where you will find her. Now tell me, Mrs. Purdy.
I've already told you, Mr. Jones. I ain't seen her.
No, I can't accept that. The voice was too strong, too clear. It guided me here, to this house.
I wouldn't know about that.
And to that room. She was in that room.
No.
Who was in that room?
Who?
Who was the last one to occupy it?
A gentleman.
No. It was a woman, a young woman, a pale, slender woman with golden hair and blue eyes and a beauty mark on her chin. Eloise Fashner. My Eloise. It had to be. Because I had to keep my promise.
What promise?
Tell me she was here. And... tell me where she went.
The one you're thinking of, she was never here.
But...
you just have a very great imagination.
You insist that Eloise has never occupied that room.
I don't know your young lady.
All right. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter now.
And then he went up to the room, turned out the gas light. Turned the handle of the jet again without striking a flame. And he lay down on the bed and...
You didn't tell him about Miss Fashner?
How could I know her name was Fashner?
Where did he say he was from?
He didn't.
And you didn't ask?
I never ask.
But did he have any papers, any identification?
No, none at all.
How do you know, Mrs. Purdy?
How do I know? Well, I looked. There was nothing.
Just as we know nothing about the girl, we also know nothing about the man. Most important, we know nothing at all of how he happened to come to this very place.
Oh, I feel sorry for them two young folk. But I don't know what can be done about it. And life goes on, sir. And I've got to get the room cleaned up and hope I can rent it out again.
You've just rented it.
I have. To who?
To me.
You... Well, now, why would you want to live in a dump like this?
I want to spend the night in the third floor back. Two people had died in that room. Were they connected to each other? My romantic writer's instinct said yes. I wanted them to know each other, to be in love with each other, and to have died because of a misunderstanding. That was the story I wanted to write. A story of star-crossed lovers in the shadow of the Ninth Avenue elevated. And yet, there could have been another interpretation. The room itself. There may have been something in the room itself. Something strange and terrifying and deadly in the room itself. The only way to find out was to sleep in the room. Spend the night there. And if necessary, fight against the room itself. Yes?
Sir, I wanted to know, is there anything you need?
Oh, no. I'll be quite comfortable, thank you. Why?
Nothing.
Well, I'm not sure it's nothing. Mrs. Purdy?
It is. It's nothing at all.
Well, then why did you hesitate before you said nothing?
Because, well...
Yes, Mrs. Purdy? Because?
Because whatever else was true about them, the fact is the last two people who slept in this room were troubled people.
Troubled?
You know what I mean. Troubled. It's something that shows in their eyes. Oh, you can hear it in their voice. And, sir, you look like a troubled person to me.
I do?
Yes, sir, you do. And, well, maybe the room gets to be, well, too much.
Do you know what you're talking about, Mrs. Purdy?
Yes, sir. And so do you. So I'm asking you, if you're really and truly troubled, don't spend the night here.
Thank you for your concern, Mrs. Purdy.
Well, I just couldn't afford to have a third one. I mean three. And in just about the space of a week, oh, I'd be ruined forever.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, it might be best if I was never to rent it out again. I could use it for storage. Yes. That's exactly what I'll do. I've just decided, starting tonight.
Starting tomorrow, Mrs. Purdy.
But I won't let you stay here.
I'm afraid you have no choice. I've paid my rent in advance.
All right, sir. But after it's too late, don't say I didn't warn you.
Do these things travel in threes? Hopefully not. Because first, it was the young girl, and second, it was the young girl. Will the third be our storyteller? All we know for certain is that we have a room, and the room seems to have a secret, a deadly secret. Certain also is the fact that we're on the threshold of Act Three, where all secrets must come out into the open.
The 1977 Buick Regal. It comes with Buick's terrific V6 engine. It carries six people and lots of Buick comfort. It's lean, it's maneuverable in city traffic. It's the most luxurious mid-sized car Buick builds. Yeah, this new Regal is pretty much everything a car should be, except for one thing. It isn't yours yet, but it can be. Just see your Buick dealer for a test drive, soon.
is a little capsule. It's Contact. It contains enough cold medicine to help relieve cold symptoms caused by every known virus. Think about that the next time you're sick. Sneezing, dripping, all clogged up. Then let us help you with real medicine, like Contact. We're number one in the whole world.
Give your cold to Contact. Real medicine for real cold.
Take only as directed.
We've got a good thing going, Western Airlines. We've got a good thing going. We'd like a chance to show you exactly why Western's the only way to fly.
Western Airlines has just put California on sale with big savings for you. Save 20% off your airfare to San Francisco or Los Angeles by flying Western's night coach. Daytimes, you can save 20% too with Freedom Fares, which are subject to certain restrictions. And you can save 10% with Economy Fares. See your travel agent or call Western for details. Then take advantage of Western's sale prices to California.
Western Airlines, we've got a good thing going.
First, we had a golden-haired girl, Miss Helen Smith, or Miss Eloise Vashner. Then there was a gentleman whose name may or not have been Mr. Jones. Both seem to have succumbed to a fateful what? We don't know. But neither could survive the third floor back. A seedy little furnished room in a tawdry little rooming house on the west side of Manhattan. O. Henry's Manhattan. And now the master storyteller is determined to discover if he can survive it himself.
The first thing is to turn the gas up high. High, bright, light. Nothing like bright light to dispel dark secrets. So, what have we here? Dingy, grimy little cell. But what's the story? Could it have been murder? Murder. Rule nothing out. Suppose I were to talk with my friend Sergeant Seamus O'Donohue, with a G. Supposing I were to say, you're satisfied with suicide?
Satisfied? Oh, bless your soul, sir. Who could be satisfied?
All right, I can understand that, but there are other possibilities.
Such as?
Murder.
Murder? By who?
Oh, we're in the realm of supposition.
I appreciate that.
Mrs. Purdy, speculate with me. Suppose Miss Smith or Miss Vashner had something of value.
Such as?
Oh, a ring, a jewel of some sort. A gift from a loved one. And Mrs. Purdy saw it. And Mrs. Purdy was tempted. And Mrs. Purdy stole into the room. She had a key. And she turned up the gas.
And your evidence?
I have none.
Well, then of what value is this theory to the police?
It's of no value at all to the police.
But then why do you present it to me?
Because I'm a writer, and everything goes through my mind.
Well, sir, going along with that theory, for the sake of argument, as it were. See, she killed the poor, unfortunate young lady. How do you account for the death of the young man?
The young man knew.
Well, what did he know?
He knew the young girl had been in that room.
How?
I don't know yet. But he knew that Mrs. Purdy had killed the young lady.
Well, but how did he know that?
I don't know that either yet. But he insisted to Mrs. Purdy that the young lady had been in that room. Mrs. Purdy was afraid of him. So, later that night, when he was asleep...
You're saying she did the same thing to him.
Yes, I believe that's what I'm saying.
Well, no, I must go back to the original question. Where is your evidence?
Unfortunately, it doesn't exist.
Well, then, sir, where are we?
We're still at the beginning of my story. What did happen to these unfortunate people? And what is there about that room? And so, I sit here and wonder. Let me examine the room again. The room. The threadbare rug. Smudged finger marks on the faded wallpaper. The bed, distorted by bursting springs. The room itself has been carelessly set in order. On the dresser, a half dozen hairpins. Discreet, anonymous. In the drawers, a fragment of a handkerchief. A broken bone button, a pawnbroker's card. Two forgotten marshmallows. A book on the divination of dreams. And deep dust on the windowsills. An old, dried-out, half-smoked cigar in the corner. An old cork, broken pencil. All the debris of those who are homeless in this, their temporary home. And then, I could smell something sweet. Delightful. It was the smell of mignonette. It came as a single buffet of wind with such sureness and fragrance and emphasis that it almost seemed a living visitant. And then the room grew dark. I heard voices. Voices clear. And here. In the room.
I love you. I love you, Eloise.
And I love you, George.
I don't want to live without you.
Oh, George, I'm supposed to be the romantic one.
I can't conceive of life without you.
Well, you'll have to live without me for a little while, George.
Darling, I don't want you to break your heart.
Nothing. No one can ever break my heart. Except you. And you'd never do it.
The world can break your heart. Especially the world of the stage.
Oh, George, I must have my chance.
I'll go to New York with you.
No. No, you can't give up your job at the bank.
I can get a job at a bank in New York.
No, George, this is your bank. Here they know you and appreciate you. In 10 years, you'll be the president.
I'm in a terrible position because... Well, you'll think I'm only saying this to keep you here.
Oh, no. I believe you're saying what you feel is the truth.
Don't go because... Because you're not good enough.
Oh.
You're angry.
No, I'm not angry.
Darling, you're so good at our little community drama group, but I've been to New York. I've seen great actresses. Ada Ree and Bernhardt and Miss Barrymore.
I know I'm not as good as they are yet,
but... There are thousands and thousands of hopeful girls like you.
Oh, George, dear, we've talked about all this before.
Yes, I suppose we have.
And we agreed that I am to have my chance. And at the end of a year, if...
Darling, I want you to take this ring.
Oh, George. It must have been so expensive.
Would you, read what's inscribed inside?
Yes. Don't die without me. George.
Remember it.
What a thing to say.
I know how much you want to succeed as an actress.
Do you, George? Really?
Yes. And, well, that's why I'm afraid for you.
George, don't be.
If New York says no, I don't want you to feel it's the end of the world. You must never...
Never what, George?
Die.
Oh, George.
No, I mean, let your hopes die, your spirit die. Let the brightness inside you die. Do you understand?
Yes, George.
And if you ever feel that things are too much, you must send for me.
that's what it means.
Yes, George. Yes, my darling, I know.
I opened my eyes. I saw nothing. But the room was no longer dark. It was bright. The gaslight was burning cheerily. Where were they, those two people? Who were they? I'd heard them so clearly. They could have been in the room with me. George, he must have been Mr. Jones. And Eloise, of course, she had been Eloise Vashner. And this had been their parting scene. Then, once again, the stale, dank odor of the room had disappeared, only to be replaced by the sweet aroma of the mignonette. And once again, voices.
It's a beautiful ring.
I didn't say it wasn't, but it's small.
Yes, but it should be worth...
Worth what? It has an inscription which lowers the value of the ring.
Oh, please. How much for the ring?
Where do you live?
Does it matter? On the west side.
No. Where is your home?
My home?
Well?
I don't have a home anymore.
Oh, yes, you do.
I can't go back.
You can. Now tell me, where is your home?
Why?
Because, wherever it is, I will give you the price of a railroad ticket home. Why don't you go back to him?
Who?
Him, whoever he is. Do you mean to stand there and tell me there isn't a boy back home?
He wouldn't want me now.
Well, the ring. Do you see what it says on the ring? Do you mean a boy who would have that engraved on a ring wouldn't want you?
Please, give me anything you want for the ring, anything you think it's worth.
Call him. Send him a telegram.
I can't. Don't you understand? I can't.
And once again, the voices were gone. The room was still dark, and the sweet smell of mignonette persisted. I heard a whisper at first, then it grew louder. It was her voice, the voice of the girl called Eloise.
George. George, are you there? Oh, George. How did you find me?
Where are you? Eloise, where are you?
Oh, George, how did you find me?
I hear you, Eloise, but I can't see you.
How I wanted you to come to me. How I longed for you. How I needed you.
Eloise, it's you, Eloise.
But I couldn't, not after what I did.
Eloise.
You were right, George. It was the end of the world. My hopes died, and my spirit.
Louise, where are you?
And I died.
Louise. Oh, Eloise, you forgot what I said.
No, George, I never forgot.
Why did you do it, Eloise? Why did you die without me?
You have to forget me. You're still young and strong and filled with hope and spirit and brightness.
Why did you die without me, Eloise?
Please, George.
No. You can't die without me. You can't.
No. George, don't.
It won't take long, darling. I'll be with you in just a few minutes.
Suddenly, the aroma of mignonette was gone. In its place was another smell, a sickly, sweetish smell, And I heard it in the dark. I heard it. Sergeant Seamus O'Donohue's deadly snake. The gentle snake that neither bites nor crushes, but who breathes the sweet and pungent air of death. Yes. The jet was turned on, but the flame was out. Quickly, because by now I was starting to cough and gasp, I turned off the jet, threw open the window, and breathed the open, life-giving air.
I must say it's a beautiful story.
You like it, Ben?
They both die, but since they die for love, it's all right.
Thank you.
Is it true?
True? A writer finds his own truth.
But in this case, you could find the actual truth, should you care to.
Is that a fact, Mrs. Powledge? How?
Well, we don't know if these two people actually knew each other or anything about the ring other than your own fancy.
I did hear the voices.
Yeah, but a writer always hears voices. You could ask the pawnbroker.
The pawnbroker?
Yes, you said when you were looking around the room, you found a pawnbroker's card.
Yes, I did.
So wouldn't it just stand to reason?
Yes.
All you have to do is go down and see the pawnbroker. Ask if there was actually such a girl and such a ring.
I could have done that, but I didn't.
You didn't? Why not?
Because, Miss Powledge, that would have been cheating.
Which is something O. Henry would never do to a reader. And so, the master of irony and suspense was so good at it, because in suspense is how he loved to live himself. He must have been his own best reader, just as surprised by his surprise endings as you and I are. I'll be back shortly.
Hello, this is Julius Irving. When I'm on the court, I can't allow myself to be distracted by anything, because basketball is a game of total concentration. The work of the March of Dimes also involves total concentration. The March of Dimes is concentrating on how to solve the nation's number one child health problem, birth defects. And that's something that should concern all of us who want a healthy future for our children. As the facts stand now, more than 250,000 babies are born each year in this country with birth defects. But there is hope. The March of Dimes is supporting research programs that may one day find the means to protect the unborn and the newborn from birth defects. Researchers have already found ways to prevent some birth defects. I believe that with our help, yours and mine, the battle can be won. So please help the March of Dimes efforts and ensure a healthy birthday for all babies. Be as generous as you can and give to the March of Dimes. Thank you.
Yes, he loved to write, O. Henry did. And his favorite theme was the one of two lovers kept apart in the maze of the great unfeeling city. Sometimes they were united in this world, and sometimes they had to wait for the next. But he always joined them together at the end. For to O. Henry, the end was eternity. For you, our listener, however, there is no end. We go on here seven times each week. Our cast included Robert Dryden, Marion Seldes, Joan Shea, and Russell Horton. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
The short barrel comes out of holster faster on the draw.
Draw? But what are you talking about?
Oh, nothing.
Now, don't you say that to me, Luke. Now, what you want me to come out here for, huh?
To watch me.
To watch you what?
See that bottle sitting on that rock?
Uh-huh.
Well, I want you to watch me draw and shoot. Like this.
Luke, what was that for?
Jim, am I as fast as ever?
What's the point?
Just answer me, Jim. Never mind anything else. Am I as fast as ever?
You look as fast.
Are you sure, Jim? Are you sure?
I think so.
Well, Well, I guess I'll have to try the real way to find out.
What do you mean, the real way to find out, Luke? The real way to find out what?
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division.
Mrs. E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
I'm Fred London for your Total Discount dealer in Everett, Haight Anderson, Pontiac, Buick, and Oldsmobile. We're ready to prove it when we say Discount Land. Pontiac offers a $200 rebate on all 76 and 77 Astros and Sunbirds, but Discount Land gives you $300 more for a total of $500 rebate on these cars. Use the $500 for a down payment or take it in cash. Only at Haight Anderson. Go to the Muckleteel Ferry turnoff on I-5 North, get off at Evergreen, and look for Discount Land.
Mike Moran talks about the traffic reports.
If you'll ever notice, when you're driving down the freeway, they're hard to spot, but you'll see little scanner television cameras. And this is what Chris watches on her monitors. So she can tell wherever there's a traffic problem on any of the freeways, plus she has spotters every place. And Chris is on a direct line from Cairo Studios to AAA. So that's how it works. She's always on top of everything.
Cairo Radio Traffic Reports, morning and afternoon.
She just brightens up my day whenever she laughs, and she always laughs.
KIRO, Seattle, the news authority. The world tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The American cornucopia, a superabundance of food unparalleled in human history. Of all the food commodities that move in world trade, the United States accounts for some 80% of soybeans, nearly three-quarters of all the corn, and more than half of all wheat and flour. But now a devastating drought is beginning to afflict the agricultural heartland of the United States. Many fear the Dust Bowl days may be returning. And the question is, can we continue to feed the rest of the world as well as ourselves? What happens when drought and weather upsets take their inevitable toll here at home? Are we preparing for these lean years? Or will we continue to go our merry way, assuming it just can't happen here? Climatologists warn that we may be in for some really tough weather problems if the patterns of the last several decades are any kind of a clue. There have been at least eight successive dry periods east of the Rockies, spaced 20 to 22 years apart. At the same time, there appears to be a major global cooling trend, a change in weather patterns worldwide. Many meteorologists feel this gradual cooling trend is going on, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's going to seriously affect crops in the growing season, perhaps from now right on out. There's been a definite change in the weather worldwide. From all indications, it may put a big damper on our efforts to stay ahead of that food versus population curve and to feed the Earth's hungry billions. Over the last few decades, climatologists have noticed a cooling trend emerging from the masses of meteorological data available to them. Temperatures peaked around 1945 and have been dropping ever since. The favorable weather period we've just lived through, according to Reed Bryson, a noted meteorologist from the University of Wisconsin, has been the most abnormal of the past 1,000 years. From 1880 to 1940, the world, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere, went through a period of significant warming. I heard this from tall, quiet-spoken Dr. Murray Mitchell, Jr. of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He is one of this nation's most respected climatologists. He went on, and I quote, "But since about 1940, there has been a distinct drop in average global temperature. It's fallen about half a degree Fahrenheit, even more in high latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere. England's annual growing season shrank by 9 or 10 days between 1950 and 1966, Hubert Lamb noted. In the northern tier of the United States Midwest, summer frosts again occasionally damage crops. Sea ice has returned to Iceland's coasts after more than 40 years of virtual absence. Glaciers in Alaska and Scandinavia have slowed their recession, and yet some in Switzerland have begun to advance. This cooling of the Earth's climate has also prevented moisture-laden equatorial air from reaching the badly parched African sub-Sahara region. The extended drought that followed was responsible for the massive famines that occurred there in the early 1970s. With food grain reserves dropping to record low levels, a good harvest every year has become a virtual imperative. That means optimum weather will be essential if humanity expects to stay in the ballpark and play its losing food versus population game. And much of the credit for these tremendous yield increases over the last 15 years should be attributed to optimum weather conditions, according to John McQuigg, a leading government climatologist at the University of Missouri. He said, and I quote, the probability of getting another 15 consecutive years of good weather is about 1 out of 10,000. Dr. Reed Bryson echoes McQuigg's forebodings. He said, and I quote, there's very important climatic change going on right now, and it's not merely something of academic interest. It is something that, if it continues, will affect the whole human occupation of the earth, like a billion people starving. Now, these doomsday-seeming biblical prophecies out of some obscure book such as Isaiah, Jeremiah, or maybe the Apocalypse are not coming from wild-eyed biblical prophets, as some people might say these scientists might appear to them. I remember in one occasion, one leading scientist who was talking about the food versus population curve, about pollution and what we're doing to this earth of ours, was called the Jeremiah of modern science. But these are serious men making statements that are so awesome they boggle the mind. The starvation of a billion human beings? But we take this casually. We're jaded, we're exhausted, we're living in a time where bad news comes with our morning toast and coffee. We live in a nuclear-armed world, a world of exploding population, a world of dramatically changing climatic and weather trends, a world of political upset, a world of nuclear proliferation, and we're tired of hearing all of this. We'd like to get ours while the getting is good and live our day in the sun and have our fun and let the world go away and come back some other day. We like to play the little game of hide and go seek, of hide our minds from that which does exist and seek our day-to-day personal physical pleasures and not really face the future. But believe it or not, the future is going to come crushing in on us, and what is happening right now in Europe, in Asia and Africa, and principally inside the United States and Canada, as drought afflicts many of our chief food-growing states, is going to come crushing in on your daily way of life. Now, the effects of these drastic changes are showing up in various ways. Bryson feels that the life-giving monsoons that have so far provided marginal subsistence to many areas of the third world may not return with any sort of regularity during the rest of this century. According to Fortune magazine, if he, that is Bryson, were correct, there would seem to be scant prospect that even the present populace of the monsoon belts can be maintained, even if all the arable land in the rest of the world were placed in full production for this purpose. Even relatively minor climatic changes could easily tip the present precarious food population balance in the wrong direction. According to Henry Lansford of the National Center for Atmospheric Research, it will not take an apocalyptic climatic event such as the onset of a new ice age to bring about great human suffering from famine. And the chances of this occurring are not all that remote. According to Lansford, quote, the climate trends that some scientists are predicting could bring us to the point of catastrophic consequences between the increasing population and inadequate food supplies much sooner than many people expect. Meanwhile, it is drought in Africa. Most of the people afflicted by these climatic changes live in a so-called hunger belt, where at least 60% are malnourished and 20% more are starving. The hunger belt includes many nations near the Earth's equator, but particularly hard hit are the nations just south of the Sahara. In the past 6 years, the Sahara has expanded 100 miles southward in some places. In recent years, it's been averaging about 30 miles a year. The Sahara is already the largest desert in the world, covering an area more than 3 million square miles, larger than the continental United States. Some 25 million people live in the present drought area of the southern fringes of the Sahara. This region includes six of the world's poorest and least known countries. The nations that are severely afflicted are Mauritania, Senegal, Mali, Upper Volta, Niger, and Chad. In a 2,000-mile strip of western Africa south of the Sahara, millions of cattle have died and crops have failed. Dust from the drought-stricken nations have been detected.